Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks, everyone. This is Queen Tahira. Welcome to Sign of Time, Blog Talk Radio. I'm having a little problem getting logged into the studio, so I ask that you bear with me while I work this process out. I just want to remind everyone that every Sunday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we invite you to participate in our weekly conference calls. The number to dial is area code 712-432-1500, and the access code is 220981#. Again, every Sunday, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Please reach out to us on Sign of the Times, the UAC, and New Power Radio Network. We have faithfully had our Sunday conference calls ever since we began the UAC, effective July 2013. So, we ask that you please, you know, consider calling in, letting us know what you do and do not like about the broadcast, if there's some things that you would like to see happen on Sign of the Times, or if the UAC or Sign of the Times can support you in any way, please reach out to us, as well as on Facebook. My Facebook page is Queen Tahira, You can reach out to us there on New Power Radio Network, as well as Sign of the Times Blog Talk Radio. We also ask you please support our sponsors, Manhood Racing Culture, where Dr. James Jones is the president and CEO of Manhood Racing Culture. You can find him on the World Wide Web at manhoodraceculture.com, as well as on Facebook as James Jones, as well as Manhood Race and Culture on Facebook as well. So please reach out to him. Also, please reach out to Arlie Gordon. Arlie Gordon is on Facebook as Arlie Gordon III and Unity Design on Facebook, and the World Wide Web is unitydesign.com. And Unity is spelled UNITEE. Tonight we have joining us brothers from the Free Alabama Movement, and we're going to get them logged in here as soon as I get this studio situation worked out. But these brothers are really great advocates. They are, I guess, if you will, captives of the judicial system in Alabama, and they started the Free Alabama Movement because of the unfair and unjust treatment of the prisoners there in Alabama. It is a statewide movement, and if you would like to reach out to them, you can do it on freealabamamovement.org on the World Wide Web. So please bear with me as we get this thing worked out here in the studio so we can get the broadcast started. Again, thank you for listening to Sign of the Times. My name is Queen Tahira. We'll be right back. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to Sign of the Times. Please bear with me. We're having some technical difficulties with getting logged into the studio. I'll be right back.
Praise and thanks. Mojuba Akoda, Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Alua Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Ode Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun to all the God children, Mojuba Egun to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba Egungun to all the chiefs, Mojuba Egungun to all the Awos, Mojuba Egungun to all those that are listening, who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe,
Ashe-o.
Ashe-o.
We had to have the ancestors open up the way, so I appreciate your patience. 2382, peace. Is this Brother Haru? Last four digits, 2382.
Yes, peace. It's Brother Kinetic from Free Alabama Movement.
Peace, Brother Kinetic. How are you?
I'm peaceful. How you be, Queen?
I'm well. Thank you for asking, and thank you for joining us tonight. So where you want to get started, can you introduce yourself, talk a little bit about the FAM3, and introduce the listeners, for those who might not be familiar with the Free Alabama Movement. Tell them what the Free Alabama Movement is.
Peace to the listeners. And one first of all, I'd like to thank you for having myself and Brother Dati on tonight that represent the FAM3. We missing a spokesperson raised out of communication, but he always with us in mind and with spirit. Now, a little bit to take a little history. The Alabama prison system has been in decay and in disorder for a long time. There have been many protests by the brothers in the Alabama prison system in regards to the unsanitary living conditions, as well as the working for free. You know, that has been a real issue with the brothers, who are finally understanding that this is a modern-day slave empire that they're running, as they provide no education, no real rehabilitation program, and the only thing that they offer is for you to work for free. And that became a problem as the brothers became conscious of how much money their labor was generating. As I said, we have had several protests over the years in the Alabama prison system. We just have never really had a true agenda, a collective agenda. And the brother spokesperson, Ray, was sitting down one day, and we were talking about what could we do to change the conditions in our situation. And, you know, we had talked about repeated times that we had did shutdowns for many of them things like, you know, the food or lack of recreation or, you know, different condition things that were just institutional. But he came up with the idea that we could do something collectively statewide. And he began to write, and he penned what became our manifesto, the Free Alabama Movement's manifesto, where we were going to address the fact that Alabama prison system was 200% over its design capacity. Alabama prison system is designed to hold 13,500 people, yet it wavers anywhere from 27,000 to 30,000 people any given day. And as I said, it's 200% over its capacity. So we knew that that was an issue that had to be addressed. As I said, the working for free, that was an issue that had to be addressed. We didn't understand why so many young 17, 18, and 19-year-old brothers were being sentenced to life without parole in the prison system without any kind of chance of redemption or any kind of chance to make it back to society. So we knew that something had to be done to address that issue as well. There were several brothers who were being receiving less than adequate medical treatment. In fact, a lot of brothers were not receiving any medical treatment. So we knew we had to include that as a part of our manifesto. In Alabama, they have one of the most discriminatory drive-by shooting laws where anybody who's outside of a vehicle or inside of a vehicle and death involved, it's mandatory that you get life without parole or the death penalty. And we noticed that only young black brothers were being charged with this offense. And it came to light in 1999 when a white, middle-aged woman committed the same kind of offense, and they re-coined the term road rage rather than it being drive-by shooting and capital murder. With life without parole, she was given a breakdown of a manslaughter in 3 years. And that brought it to light that they were using this law discriminatory, and we began researching other laws that were being applied discriminatorily. So we encompassed all of this into our manifesto of things that we had an issue with that affected the mass majority of those who were incarcerated in the state of Alabama. And once we got the manifesto and the book put together, we were at two different institutions. I was the law clerk at Holman Correctional Facility, and he was the law clerk at St. Clair Correctional Facility. So we used those positions to type of manifestos and issues, and we began organizing in our respective institutions. And we came together and decided on a date that we would come together and that we would no longer provide labor for the state of Alabama. And every day that they refused to grant the issues that we were protesting about, that they would lose millions of dollars in free labor. Therefore, we on January 1st, 2014, all 650 inmates at Holman Correctional Facility refused to go to their assigned job, refused to do anything other than sit on their rack. For two days, it was Holman Correctional Facility in a complete shutdown. And on January the 3rd, St. Clair Correctional Facility, all 1,200 brothers that were at St. Clair refused to go to work. And it became a statewide movement. And then 2 days later, Elmore Correctional Facility, all the brothers at Elmore refused to go to work. And the Free Alabama Movement became a nationwide movement at that point because people understood that prisoners were not individuals, but we were a class of people. And just as we were in the state of Alabama, brothers in the state of Mississippi, the state of California, and other people began to take notice of what was going on, and the seed was planted. The actual shutdown lasted 3 weeks that they had to document it, 3 weeks that we went and cost the state several hundreds of thousands and possibly $2.3 million, but the numbers fluctuate. But in any event, it became clear that we had the power to control our destiny, that we could change our condition and situation by withholding our labor from the state of Alabama, because that's what it was all about to them. It wasn't about crime and punishment. It was about warehousing men for free labor, cheap labor, what Alabama has always been known for since the days of slavery. On January the 22nd, after the shutdown was officially ended, the compromise was supposed to be made that things would be addressed after we had a press conference at the state legislature. About 20 officers stormed the block that I was sleeping in, and I was taken to the ship office, supposedly, to talk to the lieutenant. At that time, they placed bogus charges on me that I had what appeared to be a cell phone battery in my property, and I was placed in segregation, at which time they brought all kind of paperwork that I had organized and that I had shut their prison down, and I was the leader of the Free Alabama Union, et cetera, et cetera. And they initiated this paperwork to put me in Alabama's most restricted custody, which required that I have no reading material, that I receive no visits. And I was in that custody for almost 22 months, and I was just reduced from that custody 2 weeks ago. So now I'm in medium custody, but I'm still being held as a political prisoner in the segregation unit. And at the same time that I was placed in segregation unit, Brother Spokesperson Ray was placed in segregation in St. Clair under the same criteria, yet they didn't serve him any paperwork. They were just holding him under investigation, and to this day he's still being held under investigation 23 months later. But after that shutdown and the DOC failed to come through on the things that they agreed to, we had prepared for another shutdown that was scheduled for 3 months later on April the 1st. The day prior to that, they stormed the block and they apprehended Brother Fati Talib as being one of the main organizers of the upcoming shutdown. And he was placed in segregation up under these restrict conditions. And he has been in segregation with us. And that's what born the FAM 3. The three people that they hold responsible for the shutdown of three of their major institutions that cost them possibly millions of dollars. And, you know, over the 3 months from segregation, under the most extreme conditions, we've continued to reach out and organize and, you know, do the things we do. And in the course of that, we were able to link up with brothers out of Mississippi and help forge the Free Mississippi Movement, which turned into the Free Mississippi Movement United. And those brothers are still organizing in the state of Mississippi as we're preparing for something that's out of proportion to what anyone has thought about. The brother Sadiq Hassan, who is a part of Lucasville 5 in Ohio, in the state of Ohio on Death Row, we were able to network and link up and begin to strategize on a national movement for the state of Ohio, the state of Alabama, the state of Georgia, the state of Mississippi. And we linked up with the brother Anthony Robinson, who's from the state of California, but he has been exported to the state of Mississippi in one of their private prisons. But in the course of networking with this brother, he started what's called the New Underground Railroad, where he has the exact same platform, the same agenda as the Free Alabama Movement that we're putting down and we're promoting for this upcoming year, 2016, that, you know, we're networking with all brothers that are incarcerated across the country to understand that this is not just a black thing, that this is not a white thing, that it's not an Alabama thing, but prisoners are slaves indeed and slaves in fact, and we must come together in order to change our condition and to change our situation. And, you know, that's just a little background to what we have been through and the things that we're planning in the future. But like I said, I have Brother Fati Talib on, who is also a part of the FAM 3. And I want to give him an opportunity to have a few words for our audience as well. Brother Fati, you still with me?
Yeah, peace, God. Man, peace and blessings. Queen Sahira. Signing with the time. I enjoy listening to the show. Not to excuse the noise in the background. We are incarcerated in segregation. as Brother Kinetic said, you know, the Free Alabama Movement, you know, it's a national movement now. We're trying to unite with all brothers all across the country on the inside and trying to get brothers just to be aware, about, you know, the conditions of what's going on, you know, not just in the state of Alabama, but all around the country as well. You know, we have been, you know, put in place in segregation based on just the simple mere pretenses, you know, that we have allegedly committed some type of institutional violation, and they are really just violating our constitutional rights. I know when I was placed in segregation along with five other brothers, and all of those brothers have been released except for the fam three. And all of those brothers have been released except for the fam three. And, you know, they charged us with allegedly, you know, forming together, myself and some other guys, and allegedly approached some inmates who were going to work and supposedly threatened them with weapons, which none of this actually occurred. They produced no evidence. They produced no witnesses. They didn't produce anything. You know, they just orchestrated these charges against us, placed us in segregation, and put several brothers down as being enemies for, you know, myself and other brothers in order that we would not be able to return to a population again. So this is sort of like something that, you know, is indefinite unless we, you know, find a way to shut these prisons down. So, you know, that is our mission. That is our aim. And our concept is freedom or death. You know, ain't nothing else. And I'm peace with that.
All right. Thank you so much. Peace to you, too, as well, God. And thank you as well for joining us tonight. We need to give a visual. You know, people think that being a prisoner is, you know, something that they see on TV. Can you tell folks what a day is like at an Alabama prison and what you face and what the sleeping conditions and work conditions are? Maybe some of the jobs that they have you all doing. Tell folks what it's like. Give a visual of what you all experience on a day-to-day basis.
Well, a normal day. Can you hear me?
Okay.
Peace, Queen. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, we hear you.
Okay. Well, a normal day in prison is at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, you woke up and you have the option to go to what they call chow, to go to eat or not, which is usually just grits. And I know most people up north don't know what grits are, but, you know, it's a form of wheat, just grits and two biscuits and some syrup, and you can choose to eat or not eat. And that's how the morning starts. And they begin at 6:30 with what they call work call, and people are found out to what they got the industry where I'm at now. They make every tag in the state of Alabama. So you have brothers who go out here for 15 cents an hour, who 8 to 10 hours a day making tags. But usually, you know, a day in prison is a day of chaos and confusion, where 9 times out of 10 there's no officers in the dormitories. Each dormitory houses 115 people. And you have 115 people in a dormitory that's designed to hold 60 people. So if you can get a visual of a space that's designed to hold 60 people with actually 115 people there, and these are 115 grown men who are packed in like actual sardines in a can. And as you can imagine, tempers flare, you know, all kind of things occur. And it's really just each man for himself. You know, you do whatever you're big enough to do, whatever you think you can get away with. And, you know, you have to actually be on your guard mentally as well as physically on a day-to-day basis because this is all day and all night. You know, it ain't no break, ain't no let up. This is how it's going down. And most of the officers who work inside of the institution are merely children, you know, 21 and 22 and up to 25, and you have a few who have been around for some years, but the majority of the officers work here are fairly children who just trying to get a check, who have no experience in life, no experience with dealing with people, and definitely no experience with dealing with violent people or people who can become violent when they don't have what they want or can't get what they want. So it's really just an environment of chaos and confusion. Like I said earlier, there are really no educational or rehabilitation programs available. Most people work in the kitchen, and they work in the kitchen, as I said, for free, but they work there because they have the opportunity to get extra food and to actually steal food in order to smuggle out of the kitchen to try to sell in order to try to survive. Because if you don't have anybody on the outside who's actually sending you money, then, you know, you just at the mercy of the state. And most people, as I said, that's the trade, that you get a job so you can steal something from the place you work. If you're a hall runner, you steal cleaning supplies so you can sell bleach and other chemicals to people. If you work in the kitchen, you steal chicken, you steal hot dogs, bologna, whatever you can steal to try to make sandwiches to sell. You work in the barbershop, you know, you're trying to make a hustle some kind of way inside the institution. And that's the catch-22 that most people get caught up at. They don't really want to work in these jobs because they're not getting paid anything. But they take these jobs for the opportunity to be able to steal something, to do what they think is hustling, to be able to survive on a day-to-day basis. And it puts you into a position where you promote and support your own suffering. You contribute to your own incarceration because each day that you go to work for free is money that you produce for the state of Alabama, and that money in turn is turned around and used to keep you incarcerated longer. So, you know, that's what we strive to try to disrupt. We try to strive to disrupt the routine of the 1980s way of doing time. I came to prison by myself, and I'm just trying to make sure I'm okay, so I'm doing what I got to do. And, you know, that whole mentality is what keeps us here. It keeps us divided. And as long as we divide it, then they can continue to control us. And I tell people all the time that it's insane for us to think that one officer can control 117 men. I don't think one man can control 117 children. But they continue to do it day in and day out for years. And the way that they do it is through divide and conquer. As long as they keep us destitute, broke, and ain't got nothing, and separated and divided, they can continue to run their slave empire. And once we began to educate brothers about what the situation really was and what kind of power we have in unity, the state of Alabama recognized that as being like insurrection. So they labeled us a threat to the Department of Corrections and placed us in segregation away from the brothers that are out there in the population going through those changes. As you know, it's sad that so many of the brothers inside here are not afforded the opportunity to get education, but they can get high on any drug that you can think of all day long because the institutions are flooded, and we wonder how these institutions get flooded like this when none of us goes outside of the institution. So it's clear to speak that it's a systematic process of keeping us distracted and divided by keeping us high on these drugs and keeping us away from unifying, keeping us away from actually holding the DOC accountable for the things that they're doing and the things that they're not doing. Yet they're being paid money to do certain things in these institutions, and they're not providing those services to the men who are incarcerated here. And majority of the people who leave here worse than they came because, as I said, they're not provided any kind of education or rehabilitation, and the jobs that they're given have no skills that can be translated into society. You know, when you sweep and mop the floor all day, I'm saying that's not a skill that you can take to society to be able to provide for yourself with. And a lot of those brothers fall back into that lifestyle that leads them right back into this revolving door of prison. It's just a setup that we understand that education or lack of education is the reason that a lot of brothers come to prison. But if you place a man in a warehouse and you're only working for free and you give him no opportunity to actually grow, to develop, and he only deteriorates, then you're setting him up to come right back to the prison. That's basically what we're up against. You know, we're just warehoused in these buildings for years. And, you know, a lot of people become hopeless and they get off into things that, you know, that's non-conducive to their growth and their development. And sad to say, a lot of these young brothers lose their lives over things that are not worth it. And if we don't take the initiative as black men, or as men, period, and to bring a stop to this and to make the DOC be held accountable, then we all should have just sit here and die. And I'm not with just sitting around and dying. I'm with fighting. So I choose to educate, to liberate. And that's what we're about if we are done. We're striving to educate our brothers in order that we can become our own liberators.
No, you mentioned that there are young people there in Alabama in the prison system. We've talked about the school-to-prison pipeline on Sign of the Times as well as the campus in New Jim Crow. Can you tell a little bit about, you know, do you have a relationship with those groups? And talk a little bit about the ages of some of the prisoners that are being sent to adult prison that maybe should still be in juvenile.
Well, actually, one of the landmark cases today where they're dealing with juveniles is Evans versus Alabama. Evans is a young white brother that I happen to know personally, who was 14 when they gave him life without parole in the Alabama prison system. But he's not the only one. A lot of these brothers range from the age of 15, 16 to 25. So that's what the general prison population in Alabama is like. You know, the mid, the 30s and 40s and up are the minority in the Alabama prison system today. And I'm talking about it is flooded with a bunch of young black brothers in the prison system. I'm talking about we have a agenda where we strive to catch these young brothers and, you know, bring them into our self-education programs. And here at this institution, we have some very, very dedicated brothers who spend their time, you know, buying books, buying DVDs in order to try to educate a lot of these brothers. And, you know, there's some that fall through the cracks and get caught up in the prison life. But for the majority of them, that's our goal and our objective, to reach out and grab them. One of the younger brothers, a part of the movement, I think he's been on the show before, the brother Jaja Teule. He's a clear example of a young brother that, you know what I'm saying, that we were able to catch and, you know, give the tools to educate himself, to grow and develop. And, you know, he's doing a remarkable job. And in return, he gives back by reaching out to other young brothers and trying to pull them in out of this trap. But for the most part, that is the majority of the Alabama prison system. 16 to 25 is what it looks like. And these are children. And me, myself, I have children that are older than a lot of these people that are in prison. And it's sad to see this many children be lost in the system, and not just lost in the system, they're actually giving them death sentences. And that is the thing. Life without parole is one of Alabama's first favorite sentences, to give you life without parole. That means a lifetime of free labor for them. But now, Brother Thotsy, in the institution where you at, what is the outlook in regards to the youth?
You know, peace. In regards to the youth, you know, here at St. Clair, mainly it's ran by guys who are really a part of different organizations and affiliations. When I say organizations, I'm talking street organizations, Blood, Crips, Disciples, that nature. And really, you know, they're wild, and they're really out of control. I mean, they have been given so much time and, you know, a day in the life here at St. Clair. You know, this is one of the most violent prisons in the country, the most violent in the state of Alabama. And, I mean, you got a bunch of young guys who are walking around, you know, all day basically in groups, and, you know, everybody, you know, is carrying knives. I mean, everybody's looking for, you know, that, you know, moment when something's going to happen, you know, they express their, you know, displeasure about their condition, you know, in violent ways. And, I mean, these young guys up here, you know, we have some brothers out there who are, you know, trying to, you know, help organize and educate. But, you know, for the most part, like I said, you know, they let them run the prison. When I got up here, you know, they were being allowed to, you know, goes literally to another block or dorm, and I'm talking 40 or 50 deep, and literally knock on the cube window with knives in their hands and literally tell them to open the door. They need to go in there and handle some business. So these are the type of things that's going on up there at St. Clair. I mean, you know, they pretty much run it. And so we're trying to, you know, get out there and you know, get a grip on them because they're drugged out and they're just looking for a way to really make it through another day. When you talk to them, they'll just tell you, look, I'm just trying to get through another day. And they turn to drugs in order to do that, you know, to take them out of their minds. And the institution has no problem with, you know, letting those drugs in. You know, they would rather for us to be in segregation, FAM 3, than be in population where they, these young guys are at. You know, I was actually told by the warden that, you know, he would rather deal with the violence among the youth, you know, with them stabbing each other and killing each other than, you know, to allow me or spokesperson Ray, you know, in the population with them up here at St. Clair, that, you know, the Free Alabama Movement was just not something that, you know, he wanted to deal with because we were disrupting what he called the orderly operations of the institution. So, I mean, basically, you know, with the young guys up here, you know, we're trying to reestablish a connection, you know, with the seniors and the elders because, I mean, these guys, literally, they have no respect, you know, for the elders. I mean, it's just been a disconnect between the age groups and the gaps, you know, over the generations in prison to where brothers have been just allowed, you know, to, as, you know, Connecticut was saying, to do time, you know, according to how they were doing that, per se, back in the 80s. And so, you know, the youth up here at St. Clair, you know, if someone doesn't get a grip on them soon, you know, it's really going to blow up. This is an institution that could blow up at any moment. A couple of weeks ago, we just had a young guy who was, he was murdered up here. He was killed by his cellmate. Over a cell phone, and the guy who killed him actually had like a 5-year sentence, and he was getting ready to go home in a few months. But being on these hard drugs that's being sold to these brothers at these institutions, you know, he was high, and he actually murdered his brother. A young 26-year-old black kid got murdered up here, and you know, the administration did not stop the orderly operations of the institution. It ran continuously, you know, as if nothing had even happened. I mean, just another black young man dead and, you know, no one cared. I mean, they're so numb, they're so used to it. It's like, you know, it doesn't even faze these young guys. It doesn't even bother them. And, you know, the only thing that they thinking about, you know, is how they're going to score that cat. You know, how are we going to get these drugs? How are we going to get the phone? How am I going to get high? That's the mind state of the guys up here at St. Clair. And that's why it's important that, you know, the family get released back to the population because we have a lot of work to do, and you know, we need to be up on the upper deck of this slave ship in order to get it done. Peace.
Hi, Ashe. When you speak about the day to day conditions and the ages of the prisoners, it's heartbreaking to know that. Basically, you know, at the prime point in their lives, a lot of our young brothers are being caged up. And, you know, where else is that energy supposed to go except for on something negative if they're not engaged in something positive like education or some similar services that are going to help rehabilitate them? Now, folks have the impression that, you know, when people go to jail that that they're supposed to do their time and do it, you know, I guess with no complaint. When you talk about some of the services that you all are looking for, you know, please let folks know that you're not asking for, you know, a resort or, you know, a new swimming pool to be put in. You all are seeking just basic services. Can you talk about that a little bit, please?
Sure. I'm talking about, well, to be clear about one of the services that we're protesting and we're demanding is medical treatment. And myself personally, for several years I've had issues with my stomach. And recently a brother by the name of Harold Battle was told that he had 4 tumors in his stomach that were stage 4 cancer, and there was nothing that they could do, that he was going to die. And we were trying to figure out, how do you get 4 tumors to be in stage 4 cancer without anybody detecting this? So as a part of that, seeing the brother and what he was going through, I demanded to be seen by the doctor in regards to my medical condition, because when I eat food, it doesn't process all the way through my stomach, and I have to regurgitate it. I have to vomit it back up. So they finally, after we had a violent altercation about me getting medical treatment, I was able to see the state physician, and he diagnosed me as my intestines had became tangled and twisted up, and therefore my food wouldn't process all the way through. And he referred me to a specialist in society. 3 months later, I still haven't seen a specialist, and I still haven't received treatment for my stomach condition. And, you know, this is one of the things that we've been stressing from the beginning of the movement, that, you know, the health care that we have provided is no care. And, you know, we're charged a copay. That's what's most important to them, that you sign their sick card and they can take a copayment off your account. Even though you don't have a job that pays money, that whenever your family sends you money, they are quick to deduct this money for medical costs, yet they're providing no medical treatment. From being stabbed to any kind of illness, they, you know, they have a pill or Advil that they give you. And, you know, that's the basis of what their medical treatment is providing you with a pill that's supposed to cure your illness. That's just one thing in dealing with the medical treatment, the unsanitary living conditions. As I said, you have 115 people who are bunched up in a space that's designed for 60 people. And, you know, all of the property you have, everything you've accumulated, all the things that you're cut partner or the guy who sleeps next to you is not. It's so tight and so jumbled up all your property that, you know what I'm saying, that it becomes congested. The ventilation system rarely works. The heating system never really works. In the wintertime, you freeze. In the summertime, you burn. And the cleaning supplies are never sufficient. As I said, you know, they may bring a mop bucket full of nasty water for you to clean the cells with. So you can imagine after days and days and weeks of people living, eating, sleeping, and everything in this small environment of what the conditions look like. And, you know, the ceiling, the water leaks through the ceiling. The windows, you know what I'm saying, haven't been cleaned in months. It's just filthy. It's completely, words can't even describe. Therefore, we had to create videos and a YouTube channel to actually show this to people. That, you know, sometimes words can't describe what people are living through, but we know that pictures speak a thousand words. So that was a part of the process of using these phones to video record the conditions inside of these institutions to actually show people what we were being forced to live through. You know, as I said earlier, we're not asking for resorts. We're not asking for actually to be comfortable. I believe it's impossible for a person to really be comfortable in prison. But we are asking to be treated as human beings, to be given human dignity and human respect. We're asking for humane treatment, plain and simple. We want what every man is entitled to be treated with dignity and respect and be provided what their mission statement says, a safe and clean, humane environment. And none of these institutions provide that. And they know that none of them provide that. There have been countless news articles written about the decay and deterioration of Alabama prison system. In fact, Holman Correctional Facility was built in 1969. I'm talking about, so if you can just think of the architecture that was used then. In fact, this prison had clay pipes up under it for their piping system. And a lot of those pipes collapsed, and the sewage was forced to back up into the dormitory. And rather than actually go up under the prison and redo the piping, they have some chemical that they pull down the drain that's supposed to eat away what's blocking it up and allow it to flow on through, and it never works. And this sewage, raw sewage, comes back up into the dormitory, and we're forced to smell this and to live amongst this on a day-to-day basis. The kitchen, I can't even describe what it's like when rats are comfortable running around with the people that they have working in these kitchens. You know, they're not trained and are dealing with food, and a lot of them get straight out of their bed, put some clothes on, and go straight to the kitchen and go to serving food. And, you know, this is inhumane that, you know, these people are forced to go work in here, and then they're not even being provided the proper equipment to be sanitary when they do it. A lot of the trays that they serve food on, you know, they send it to a machine that's supposed to wash them, the food from yesterday might be stuck in corners of it. You make an issue about it. Their textbook answer is you can eat it or you can throw it away. You know, and that's just some of the things that we're forced to deal with in these environments. And, you know, as you say about people's perception of prison, and that's what they say, you in prison, what you expect? What you think this is, the Hilton? And, you know, that's ludicrous that you can't even expect to have a sanitary environment to eat in. You can't have a sanitary environment to live in. I'm talking to sleep in. So, you know, those are some of the things that we knew that words couldn't portray, because a lot of people have a misconception. They got air conditioners. They got cable TV. They ain't got to work. They ain't got to pay no bills. And it's all this and all that. No, it's none of that. And we knew that just saying it was not enough, and therefore we had to begin taking pictures and videos to document this for people. And a lot of this can be seen on our videos on our YouTube channel. All you have to do is Free Alabama Movement on YouTube, and there's over 100 videos that show the deterioration and the decay of some of these institutions, as well as some interviews with some brothers sharing their experiences of what they've been through and how they got here. So, I ask all listeners that, you know, who are interested to go to YouTube, type in Free Alabama Movement, and watch some of these videos and get a true, accurate picture of what we're dealing with and why we're having such an issue with living this way that we're willing to put our life and limb on the line in order to correct. And I teach with that.
All right, you're listening to Sign of the Times. My name is Queen Tahira. Tonight we have members of the Free Alabama Movement, the FAM3. So tell folks how they can get in contact with you if they want to help. And what is it exactly that we as folks who are on the outside can do to support you more?
Well, we have, like I said, we have a YouTube channel. And we also have a Free Alabama Movement fan page on Facebook. We have a Free Alabama Movement group on Facebook that we can be reached at. Myself, personally, I can be found on Facebook at Ausur Heru. That's AusurHeru. I can be reached there. We also have Mother Ray as our contact person, Sister Kamaria, on the outside as our contact person. And Mother Ray can be reached on Facebook as Ms. Ann Brooks, or you can actually reach her at 256-783-1044. Sister Kamaria can be reached at 334. Brother Tati, I know it's 8989. What is the...
That's Chief Doug, 334-322-8989.
Yeah. And we can be, like I said, we can be reached via phone or via Facebook at any time. And anything that people want to do to help, as in regards to donations, we've been having difficulties with PayPal. In fact, they said we were having too much traffic to donations and so forth. Therefore, they froze the PayPal account that we were using. So, you know, we'd have to get in touch with Mother Ray in regards to how funds are to be directed as we are taking donations for our Blog Talk Radio show that we did for over a year. We're preparing to start back up in the next following week. So for those who would like to contribute to the blog, to help get the Blog Talk show up and running again, you can reach us on Facebook. For those who like to make donations, as we write countless articles and we do a lot of printing, a lot of distributing of information, not to just brothers on the state of Alabama, but to prisoners throughout the country. But any and all assistance and contributions that a person would like, we would definitely appreciate it. And I say you can reach us at Free Alabama Movement on Facebook, either on the fan page or the group. Inbox us, and we'll definitely get back to you as soon as possible.
Ashe. And we're going to repeat that information before the end of the broadcast. For those who are listening on your phones, please push 1 if you have a question or a comment. For those who are listening online, please dial in at 917-889-8059. And again, push 1 if you have a question or a comment for the FAM 3. So you mentioned that you all have some future things in mind, a manifesto on what it is that you all have established as your vision. Where can people find that, and can you talk a little bit about some of the things that folks can start to rally around to support you on?
Yes, well, tentatively we have set a date for Black August 2016, and we have been using the last 3 months as an education phase of disseminating information throughout institutions. So anyone who's in contact or in communication with someone who's incarcerated, we would like you to spread the word for them to get in touch with us, like I said, via Facebook or either way. Brother Hassan out of the state of Ohio, I think he was out of communication due to some complications, but he's networking on the northern end of organizing brothers in the state of Ohio as well as people in the state of Oregon. We are working with members of the IB Well Coalition out of Missouri who in Kansas City that are negotiating deals with some of the organization members in that space and linking us up with brothers on the inside. As I said, brothers in Mississippi or in full or fledged organized mode. Brothers in California are starting to get the message in. And we're just trying to get the message to as many people in prison as possible because we understand that mass incarceration and prison slavery is something that we all have in common. And we do truly believe that we have an answer to that, and that is the work strike. It is nonviolent and peaceful, and it hits the Department of Corrections throughout the country exactly where it hurts because these systems are not about crime and punishment. They're about economics. We have an economical problem, therefore we have developed an economic solution to that, and that is nonviolent and peaceful work strike, where and there is nothing that the Department of Corrections can do to a person for protesting in a nonviolent and peaceful way. And we do believe that if we come together on a collective and withhold our labor from these prison systems, that we can negotiate a change in our conditions and situation. I haven't spoke about it earlier, but I will now that you know that we have what's called the Free Alabama Movement Freedom Bill. And in this Freedom Bill, it deals with the issues that we are protesting around, as well as a lot of the laws that send my brothers here and keep them here so long. And we have that drafted out, and we have a copy of that on our WordPress. We have Free Alabama Movement .wordpress as well on our blog, where you can get copies of the Freedom Bill, or even on our Facebook page, which is the Freedom Bill. And that's what we're asking each state to do, you know, draft up your own Freedom Bill around the issues that affect the brothers in your state, and that we come together and network and be able to unify, and that we pull together on a set date, and that we all withhold our labor until this system crumbles and collapses, because the way that this system is designed and orchestrated, none of us will ever receive the relief that we're due. And, you know, everybody makes mistakes and everybody's entitled to a second chance. And I honestly believe that everyone who's incarcerated should be entitled to some type of education and rehabilitation before they are forced to go back to society. So that's what we're working on the educating part right now. And at the first of the year, we're beginning to organize a full play. We have multiple organizations throughout the country who have agreed to help in the organizing of different freedom movements in different states. So that's what we're doing now in the education phase, but we're preparing to move into the organizing phase of reaching out to different states and try to pull in as many states as possible. That they get the concept of what we're trying to do, well, not trying to do, what we're actually doing in the state of Alabama, and exactly how this works. that if we withhold our labor and we place our demands in the form of a drafted freedom bill, and we refuse to allow these Department of Corrections to make any more money off of us until our demands are met, we believe that we can change the whole dynamic of the way that the judicial system is structured in this country.
All right, I believe we have a caller. I'm going to go ahead and try to open him up. Last 4 days, 7259. Welcome to Sign of the Times. So speaking with
hello,
last
can you hear?
Four digits. Yeah, please.
It's Jersey, yeah, from Jersey over here. I just, I don't know, I just had a couple questions about the prison. And I just tuned in not too long ago, but I was hearing the brother you have on the phone, what's his name? Is he still on?
Yeah, Brother
Kinetic. When he was making the comment, yeah. When he was, yeah. But I mean, I have a lot of friends and family in prison, and what they was telling me, he was using that word, stealing food and everything. A lot of them work in that kitchen because they say they don't. That's the only time they eat. They don't steal the food to sell or do their little hustle or whatever. You know, I mean, some people may do that, but the way I talk to them, because they're scared to eat the food because they mess with it so much. You know what I mean? And it's a lot of other stuff goes on in that prison. Yeah, it's a lot of other things goes on in that prison, too. They got a lot of rape and all the other type of stuff goes on in there, too. You know, how the wardens and everybody, you know, they've really been mistreated. It's a lot of stuff you're saying, you know, I mean, you're mixing, you know, a lot. But it's a lot of other side of the story you're not telling. I don't know how much prison time you did, but it's a lot of that's going on in there, too. And,
Go ahead.
But I'm just saying the way you don't know who's listening to this show. And that stops a lot of other people from getting them jobs in that kitchen. The way you say they go just want that job just for stealing food. That's not the real reason. You know, that's not for, you know. I want to the show, but it's another side of that story. I mean, I've never been to prison. I mean, I've been incarcerated. I never did a lot of time, but I've seen and witnessed a lot.
Peace, Queen. We got somebody making a call.
Are you trying to say something? See, I was letting the brother finish before I responded.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, first of all, this is my 22nd year of a life without parole sentence, and I've done them all in maximum security prison. In regard to a lot of the things that go on, there's a lot of things that go on. Rape, people talk about rape, and it's not as prevalent as many people think. And there's a lot of things that are voluntarily done due to poverty. And I tell people that a lot of these people aren't gay. They're broke. And they use their body for a means to survive. As for, you know, people working in the kitchen to eat, yes, there are people who work in the kitchen to try to get an extra piece of chicken or to get an extra this. I don't know what state your family members are in, or are they provided with a financial benefit for working. But in the state of Alabama, there's no income for working. And a lot of these people turn these jobs into means and ways to be able to survive, where you have people who are actually called sandwich men. You know, that's who people, you know, when you go to the chow hall, the food is still prepared, and a lot of people don't eat the food the way it's served and prepared. However, the sandwich man food is going to be prepared a lot different. You're going to have seasoning on it. You're going to have the chicken fried right. You're going to have it on bread, light bread. And, you know, they're going to have it wrapped up in all kind of plastic, and they're going to smuggle it out. And that's what most people eat who can afford to eat because that's their hustle. That's what most people who work in the kitchen do. They steal food in order to sell it, in order to be able to supply their a smoking habit or their coffee drinking habit. Yeah, true. There are people who work in there just so they can eat. but in the state of Alabama, 90% of the people who work in the kitchen is strictly just to steal in order to make a hustle so they can be able to provide for their basic necessities. There's a lot of things that, you know what I'm saying, you can't describe everything that goes on with in prison, the extortion of the gambling, the people who can't pay their debts, for the people who strung out on drugs and the violence that go along with it. I'm not trying to be completely in detail of everything that goes on in these institutions because there's some things that I don't think that people would really even want to know. They wouldn't really want to hear. Definitely wouldn't want to see some of the things that go on in these institutions. As I said earlier, this is my 22nd year of a life without parole. And there's very few things that I haven't seen, very few things that I haven't experienced in the prison system. I don't know what state it was that you said your family members in, but in the state of Alabama, that's how it's going down.
Did you have another question or comment, caller? All right, we're gonna go ahead and move on. And I know that you all, have taken some time out to be with us this evening. So we're going to end within the next 20 minutes. So again, I thank you both for being on the air. I want to talk about two things before we get off the air. One, can you talk about some of the companies that you all are slave labor for? And, so folks can get an idea that these are not mom-and-pop businesses. These are multi-million-dollar companies. So can you talk about, some of the jobs that you all do and who are some of the companies that you all are forced to work for?
In the state of Alabama, I said they have industries, and a lot of their industries provide things for the state. As I said, this institution provides every license plate tag for any vehicle, trailer, or anything in the state of Alabama. They all are produced right here at Holman Correctional Facility. St. Clair has a car fleeting service, has a chemical making plant. At different institutions, they have catfish plant where they raise catfish that they sell on the market. But mainly, there are mega organizations or corporations that benefit and profit from this enterprise. And there are too many for us to just target and label. Therefore, we designated McDonald's. And McDonald's profits from prison labor. A lot of the plastic utensils, the uniforms, and some of the bread and meat patties that they have are made by inmate labor. Like I said, Sears, Victoria's Secret, there are many giant corporations who benefit from this mass incarceration and prison slavery. We just chose McDonald's as being one of those more visible corporations, and it tied in with the school-to-prison pipeline because McDonald's has a marketing campaign where they target children to be their customers, to come get these Happy Meals and so forth. Yet at the same time, they are financing prison systems that these children are being funneled into. They're not providing jobs in the community because they're getting that labor from inmates for extremely low prices that the states are taking kickbacks from, and the people on the inside are actually getting nothing out of the deal. But like I said, there are several large mega corporations that benefit from prison labor. The Free Alabama Movement and I stopped the STOP campaign or the School to Prison Pipeline. We designated McDonald's as a corporation that we would protest in correspondence with protesting at the prison to make a statement that to show the tie, to connect the dots between these corporations and this prison system and this free labor, to show people that, this is not just a small potato thing. This is a multi-billion dollar industry. As we know that they proclaim that they put $80 billion into these systems each year. But the part that they don't tell people is that they're raping us with $500 billion on a return from it. And a lot of that money is being distributed among the wealthy, and none of it is being actually funneled back into these institutions to provide services for the brothers and sisters who are incarcerated, or the family members, for that sake, as they are being extorted through us. In the state of Alabama, as I said, we work for free. Therefore, in order for you to be able to live in prison, you have to have income from someone outside. And once you can, you know, they have fines and fees that you are forced to pay. And how do you pay a $25 fine? How do you pay a $30 fine when you don't receive any compensation for your labor? Therefore, they're double taxing our family members. Our family members' tax dollars already go into financing this system. But once you're in this system, your family is extorted through you, through these fines and fees that they know that you can't pay because they work you for free. And, you know, there's a lot of the things that go into the economics of this. But, you know, McDonald's is the corporation that we've highlighted as benefiting from prison slavery. But as I said, Victoria's Secret benefits from it. There are multiple corporations that benefit from free labor from inmates on the inside. Keith, can you hear yourself?
Yes, welcome 2459. Who is this, Brother December? Welcome, we can hear you.
Hello, can you hear me, sister?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. Thank you for taking my call, sister. And greeting to everybody who's listening and the brother who's talking. Greeting to each and everyone. I have a question, and my question is that the black areas where mostly black people live is being targeted by the police to give black men ticket and possibly lock them up. The question is, black men and black women do not know their rights. What can we do as a people to teach our people when you're being stopped? This is the procedures. When a police asking you questions, this is the procedures. When you go to court, this is the procedures. I mean, how can we do that? Because I met a couple of people who's good in the law. They're good. They're very good at it. But, you know, sometimes they say they don't have time, or, you know, our people don't want to learn. But how can we organize a group? Because they are training the black community with ticket, money they do not have to pay. And if they get a ticket, they don't pay it, then it is easily for them to become a criminal. That's my question, sister.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah. Please, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, Brother Doc, just to share some insight on that from the state of Alabama. I know down here in Alabama, they don't respect the right. You know, we have brothers who are very well educated in the Constitution. I mean, they know it better than the judges and the DAs know it. And what's going on is that, you know, down here we call them trappers. We may call them honkies up there, but these trappers down here in the South, they don't care. They don't respect no rights of no black man or no black woman down here in the South. I mean, they take you to those courtrooms, and, you know, these lawyers, they're all in on it. You know, so, I mean, you know, you can educate yourself to know and give yourself the best opportunity if you want to, you know, fight, you know, for your rights and what, you know, we should do. But, you know, in the end, you know, that's what really led Brother Connecticut, Brother Sun, to, you know, come up with the Free Alabama Movement, because, you know, our rights were not being respected. You know, these brothers spent, you know, 15, 20 years filing motions and petitions, you know, to these courts, and realizing that it doesn't work, that it's all a part of the system. You know, the higher court, you know, the Alabama, the Criminal Court of Appeals, the Supreme Court, you know, they're all supporting it. So, you know, it's about something that, you know, we as a people in the black community, we have to come together and figure out, you know, what we can do as a people to establish, you know, our own rights, you know, and our own constitution, because under these private constitutions down here in the state of Alabama, it's a 1901 constitution that was put together by basically 150 Ku Klux Klansmen, you know, at a time when we had, you know, no right to participate in the voting process, you know, of establishing these laws, these, you know, Jim Crow laws that govern our community. So, you know, when they police us down here and bring us in the courtroom, I mean, it's pretty much, you know, you accept this or you're going to get the maximum. And once you're caught up in the system, you know, it's really no way out. And that's what, you know, like I said, that's the brothers to come up with the Free Alabama Movement. We understand that, you know, it's an economic problem. I mean, if, you know, constitutional, you know, having knowledge of the Constitution, if that would be the solution, then we would not even be incarcerated right now. We would be on the streets. These guys are well versed in this Constitution down here in this Ku Klux Klan state of Alabama. And, you know, these crackers down here, they just dropping the hammer on us, and we're trying to get it up off of us by any means necessary. Peace.
Peace. December, did you have another question or comment?
No, sister, that was it. Thank you. Thank you,
all
brother.
Right. Thank you for calling in. Brother Kinetic, I wanted to ask you about the Robert Earl Council. Can you talk about that and how people can support the Robert Earl Council, and what exactly is that and what do they do?
The Freedom Fighting for Robert Earl Council is a campaign that myself and some of my I have been embarking on. In 1994, at the time of the O.J. Simpson tragedy that was going on, myself and a few of my friends were riding in a car where a white guy who was under the influence of crack cocaine and alcohol actually ran us off the road and attempted to do me bodily harm, and as a result of that, his life was taken as I defended my life against him. And the police knew, and they told me they knew, yet they put together an all-white jury and fabricated a robbery that happened somewhere else where I wasn't even present. And as a result, when I was 20 years old, I was given life without parole for killing this white guy. His self-defense, yet it was contrived and orchestrated to be a robbery first degree by conspiracy and an intentional murder. Therefore, I have, you know, studied the law. You know, saying we had a outreach program where we studied the Constitution, the rules of criminal procedure, rules of evidence, rules of appellate procedure, and we taught classes. And, you know, I went through the gauntlet of exposing the fallacy of this conviction on multiple occasions. In 2007, the only witness that they had to try to tie me into the conspiracy came forth in a sworn affidavit that the police had threatened to get him the electric chair if he didn't change his story to implicate me in the theft of a gun at another location. As a result of that, I was still denied my freedom, and I began campaigning through social media and through journalism, as was a part of our program before we started the Free Alabama Movement. We were a part of what's called Halifax County, which was a semi-law office where, you know, we, a group of brothers, came together to do each other, help each other with their legal work, and to help those who were less fortunate who couldn't do their legal work. After realizing that the court system was dead set on keeping me in prison until I died to make me understand, as they said at court, you know, to send a message that this will not be tolerated, that a black man has no right that a white man is bound to respect, not even his life. Therefore, I began a journalism of of doing newsletters of exposing the travesty of what happened to me in the courtroom. And as a part of that, you know, a lot of people took interest in that. And right now, I'm president of a sister out of Milwaukee, Sister Rabia, who has some expertise and skills in organizing and outreach and fundraising with people. I came up with the concept of the Freedom Fight for Robert Earl Council, and we have been circulating the story of showing the injustice of the Alabama criminal justice system and their refusal to accept the truth and to grant me my freedom after 22 years being in prison with life without parole for defending my life against someone that they know that toxicology reports show that was under the influence of crack cocaine and alcohol at the time that he placed my life in danger. So you know that we have the resurrection of Robert Earl Council as a page on Facebook. I can be contacted, as I said, through Officer Hey Ruth in regards to that. And the facts of the case are laid out on Facebook in the resurrection of Robert Earl Council as it goes step by step to show the fabrication of evidence by the police from the beginning, the construction of a all-white jury. But you know that one of the most telling things is that I was appointed an attorney, and this attorney told me that the victim and him had been friends for like 13 years, had been in the National Guard together for like 13 years, and that I probably didn't want him to defend me. I agreed with him, and we went before open court that, you know, for him to withdraw, for me to dismiss him. The judge told me he seen no conflict and ordered him to be my attorney. In the fight for my life against his friend. Needless to say, I was convicted after a trial for 2 weeks, and I was sent to prison at 20 with life without parole. And I have been fighting for my freedom, fighting for justice since 1994 in that regard. And anyone who would like to learn more or, you know, make some kind of contribution, whether it be in circulating the word or donations in regards to the fundraiser we're doing. We're doing a fundraiser for a legal defense fund for an attorney and a private investigator to expose a lot of these injustices. As it wasn't enough that they railroaded me in the court. When it got to the appeals court, rather than determine whether or not I was complicit in this conspiracy, the Alabama Court of Criminal Appeals literally blatantly changed the facts for the case to place me at the scene of the crime, actually committing the theft, and then later committing the murder, something that never even occurred. And when we brought it to their attention, they actually told me that I had 14 days to bring that to the court's attention, and since my attorney didn't bring it to the court's attention within the due time in 1996, that I was stuck with a wrongful fixed conviction. And each attorney that I have talked to has expressed that based on Alabama law, there's nothing that they can do, even though that the transcripts show that what I'm in prison for never actually occurred. So, you know, we have been diligently working to try to not expose, because it's been exposed. There are no witnesses that actually placed me committing this crime. You know what I'm saying? I have never denied that I was the one who actually fired the shot after I was placed in danger, and that was not the issue. The issue was whether or not I committed a robbery, which denied me the ability to say self-defense because I had committed a robbery, which never even occurred. But come to find out, the mayor of the city in 1994 was a guy by the name of Johnny Henderson, and the victim in this case was Ronald Henderson, and they actually were related. And it was clearly stated that they were not going to allow me to get away with killing a white guy under no circumstance. And that has been the situation for the last almost 22 years. But I have, like I said, I have Sister Rabia, Sadara. There are countless people, family, friends, and loved ones who, you know, do what they can to aid and assist. But we're up against a system that doesn't respect the law. You know, they make the law up as they go. Because as I say, all of these things that I'm saying are documented in black and white, and it's to no avail to them. They don't care. You know what I'm saying? In the end, it's what they say, and that's what I've been forced to deal with for almost 22 years. And Like I said, I've learned every aspect of the law that can be learned, from civil, real estate, to every aspect. And I've taught the law for over 15 years. And I filed numerous appeals throughout the state of Alabama, as well as into the federal court. And the federal court has took the position that due to Alabama saying that I was procedurally barred, that they cannot hear the appeal. Therefore, the appeal was dismissed based on the fact that Alabama had designated my situation to be final. And, you know, that's where we're at now. I'm preparing to file a habeas corpus in the federal court under actual innocence based on the fact that two people were in what was a crack house when a white guy dropped an assault rifle, and one of them got it and ran out the house with it. And that mm-hmm. was it. He stole it, you know. They tricked him out of his gun, they ran, they left, he got in his car, he left. Unbeknown to myself and two other people, we were giving these dudes a ride back to a party where we were going. However, this white guy was laying in wait and watched them get into the car with us. And he took the law upon himself, and he ran us off the road at 12 o'clock at night. And after we couldn't avoid him and he attempted to do bodily harm to me, I see no other option but to defend myself. And as a result of that, I've been in prison for life without parole for the last 22 years.
Wow, I'm speechless. Wow. Okay, so you know, again, you said that there's a page on Facebook. Give the title of the page again for me.
The Resurrection of Robert Earl Council.
And what is it, do you want folks to wait until you're a little further along in the process that you're going through now, or do you want us to write letters to the commission? How can we help you?
Well, actually, at this moment, we're engaged in a letter-writing campaign in regards to me being denied medical treatment. For the last 2 weeks, that's what we have been promoting and getting circulated and organizing around, a letter-writing campaign to the warden at Holman Correctional Facility and the commission in Montgomery, the demand that I be afforded the medical treatment that a doctor has already declared that I need. But in the coming weeks, we are formulating for a fundraiser that we're doing. As I said, we're doing a legal defense fund for an attorney as well as for a private investigator to clarify all loose ends and to be able to take this issue to a federal court. As both of the people I mentioned that were a part of the theft have given sworn affidavits that I was not present in the house when the theft took place, and I had no knowledge of the theft prior to the shooting. Therefore, there was never a robbery first degree that occurred. In the state of Alabama, a robbery first degree requires that you be armed with a weapon in the process of taking someone's property. Neither one of these guys were armed, and neither one of them used force in taking the gun from the guy. He was intoxicated. He dropped the gun. One of them caught it. The other one got it and ran with it. It was a simple theft of property, something that I had no knowledge of and did not participate in. Yet it was what they used to enhance a self-defense shooting to a capital offense and charged me with capital murder as if I robbed and murdered someone. And this is the story that they sold to a jury without any evidence of it, just told the jury. And when it got to the appeals court, we were certain that it would be overturned because there was no evidence that I committed a robbery or that a robbery ever occurred and that the shooting was a result of my life being placed in danger. Like I said, rather than admit that and acknowledge and overturn the conviction, the Court of Criminal Appeals clearly just changed the facts of the case and placed me inside the house, giving a direct order to one of them to take the gun. And as a result of that, when the guy had a problem with it, I shot and killed him. A chain of events that never even occurred. And, you know, it's documented in the transcripts, it's documented in court records, it's even documented by the Attorney General that it is not what happened. Yes, this is what the Court of Criminal Appeals decided to point its own, that it wants to happen in order to maintain his conviction, and that's what I've been fighting against for all these years.
Well, I just want to give out the contact information for the commissioner in the state of Alabama for the Department of Corrections. I do have his address. It's 301 South Ripley Street, P.O. Box 301501, Montgomery, Alabama. And the zip code is 36130. Again, his name is Jefferson S. Dunn. He's the commissioner for the Alabama Department of Corrections. The address is 301 South Ripley Street, P.O. Box 301501, Montgomery, Alabama, 36130. I also have the phone number. It is area code 334-353-3883. His assistant, his executive assistant is Paula Argo, A-R-G-O, and her number is area code 334-353-3870. And we will also post this information on the Sign of the Times blog talk page on Facebook, as well as New Power Radio Network, as well as my page for Queen Tahira. So, you know, please let the listeners know any contact information you want to make sure that they have. Again, repeat, you know, how they can continue to support the Free Alabama movement, and, you know, when will you be back on the air with us?
Well, first of all, I want to say that anyone who's interested in being a part of the letter writing campaign, you can go on the Resurrection of Robert Earl Council page, and you can either print a copy from there, or you can inbox me at Asa Heyru, or you can find my campaign coordinator, which is Queen Rabia Quashire. That's R-A-B-I-A-H, last name Q-U-A-S-H-I-R-E. Inbox her or inbox me, and we will print a copy and have it sent directly to you. And it's already formed out that you can just fill in your contact information and sign to be a part of the letter writing campaign. Anything that people want to do in regards to aiding and assisting Free Alabama Movement, you can go to Free Alabama Movement, the fan page of Free Alabama Movement, the group. You can leave an inbox, and I assure you that one of us will be able to get back in touch with you as soon as possible. Anybody that wants to reach out to Free Alabama Movement via telephone, you can reach Mother Ray at 256-783-1044, and we'll definitely appreciate any and all assistance that you can give in regard to the things that we're doing on the collective and the Free Alabama Movement, as well as the things that we're working on in the, on the resurrection of Robert Earl Council and the fight for Robert Earl Council. And we'll be back on the show. We can be here once a week, or we can be back next week or the following week. We're at y'all disposal, because we're looking for mediums and avenues and venues to get the word out, because we desperately need help in changing our conditions and our situations. We're not sitting back hoping that things change. We're taking the initiative and being men about it and stepping up and doing everything that we can on the inside. And we ask people on the outside to play a supportive role. We are forming what is called Mothers and Family Members, which is the reverse of FAM. It's MAF. There's a group on Facebook that you can be a part of, Mothers and Family Members, who plays a supportive role in organizing on the outside to be a part of protests, to be a part of letter writing campaign, and so forth. So, you know, we have a lot of things going on in regards to fighting for freedom, justice, and equality for individual brothers, as well as for the collective of our people. And it doesn't just stop dealing with the institution. That we have outreach into the community. What the brother was speaking about earlier, we're designing a street law program where we're teaching brothers the Constitution, the rules of criminal procedure, which explains all of the things that he was speaking about what to do when you're arrested, what is the process when you are arrested, what are your rights, what are you entitled to, and therefore and so forth. Because a lot of brothers don't know their rights. They don't know anything about the law until they get caught up in the system. And that's the worst time to learn the law, when you're already behind the eight ball. So we believe it will be advantageous to our people that if we and get some people on the outside who would dedicate and contribute some of their time to creating the outreach or street law program, where we catch children between the age of 5 and 15 before they're introduced to the criminal justice system, and they'll know their basic rights under the Constitution, their basic rights inside of a courtroom. And for those brothers who end up in the system, who understand their rules of appellate procedure. So, you know, those are some things that we're working on that we could use assistance in, especially the street law program. Anybody interested in getting the curriculum or interested in teaching some of the these topics, please get in contact with us, because we look forward to working with any and everybody who understands that mass incarceration and prison slavery is a national phenomenon that we must come together in front and to change. And I peace with that.
Ashe. Well, I want to thank you and Brother Dati for being on the air tonight. And, you know, we're here at your disposal. So if anything occurs that you need to go on the air, you know, just hit me up and let me know and we can make it happen. But, again, you know, we're going to get this thing right one way or another and keep you in our thoughts and prayers, especially considering the medical need that you have. That's just a shame that, you know, the basic needs are not even met, let alone anything that's really going to be beneficial for when you are, you know, really released from the system. So we're going to keep plugging away at this thing. And, again, I appreciate you and much love and much respect for those who are part of the FAM family and those who are supporting you all the way up until this point. We appreciate them as well.
We thank you and we appreciate you for having us, and all listeners, we definitely appreciate y'all for tuning in. And if anything that was said that you have questions or just comments about, like I said, I can be reached on Facebook at AUSURHERU, Asur Heru. Brother Dati can be reached on Facebook at Dati Khalid, that's DHATIKHALID. And we definitely appreciate the love and support. And on behalf of spokesperson Ray, I extend our peace and blessings to all of y'all.
Ashe. Likewise, comrade. We'll talk again soon. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Please join us tomorrow for a listening session and then Friday night with Brothers of the Sun. And, hey, if y'all want to call in and just participate in the dialogue, the air is always open to you. I want you all to know that. All right, with that, we're going to go ahead and sign off for the night, y'all. We appreciate you. We love you, and we're looking forward to seeing you live and in living color on Friday night with Brothers of the Sun, and then tomorrow night for our listening session. And it looks like it's going to be Dr. Sebi as we get ready to talk about some things that are going on with our health and some of the things that are preventive and some of the things that can be cured. So, we thank you, we love you, we appreciate you, and we will see you tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Queen Tahir signing off for the night. Peace, y'all.
Something for my godson Elijah and a little girl named Corinne. Say the black of the best, the sweet of the juice. I say the dark of the flesh and the deep of the root. If I holler to my sister's on welfare, you clock in, if don't nobody else care. And I know they like to beat you down a lot. And when you come around the block, brothers clown a lot. So please don't cry, dry your eyes, never let up. Forgive, but don't forget, girl, keep your head up. And when he tells you you ain't nothing, don't believe him. And if you can't learn to love you, you should leave him. Cause sister, you don't need him. And I ain't trying to gash up, I just call him how I see. You know what makes me unhappy? Make babies and leave a young mother to be a cat. And since we all came from a woman, got our name from a woman, and I came from a woman. I wonder why we take from our women, why we rape our women, do we hate our women? I think it's time to kill for our women, time to heal our women, be real to our women. And if we don't, we'll have a race of babies that will hate the ladies that make the babies. And since a man can't make one, he has no right to tell a woman when it's one. So will the real men get up? I know you're fed up, lady, but keep your head up.
went in the wind. Last night, my buddy lost his whole family. It's gonna take the man in me to conquer this fantasy. It seems the rain will never let up. I try to keep my head up and still keep from getting wetter. You know what's funny? When it rains, it pours. They got money for wars, but can't feed the poor. Said it ain't no hope for the youth, and the truth is, it ain't no hope for the future. And then they wonder why we crazy. I blame my mother for turning my brother into a black baby. We ain't meant to survive, cause it's a setup. And even though you're better,
baby, I'm better.
You're feeling all alone. Dad's long gone and he left you by your lonesome. Thanks the Lord for my kids, even if nobody else want them. Cause I think we can make it, in fact, I'm sure. And if you fall, stand tall or come back for more. Cause ain't nothing worse than when your son wants to know why daddy don't love him no more. You can't complain, you were dealt this hell of a hand without a man feeling helpless. Because there's too many things for you to deal with. Dying inside, but outside you're looking. If it did, you couldn't take it. And don't blame me, I was given this world, I didn't make it. And now my son's getting older and older and cold from having the world on his shoulders. While the rich kids are driving big, but still trying to hold on to survive and friends. And it's crazy, things will never let up.